The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Talk to us about protecting yourself from flu this winter. At All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551, ray@rte.ie. David Brophy, conductor extraordinaire, is going to conduct us through the soundtrack to his life today. I'm really looking forward to that. Some great music, as you would expect, chosen by David for his soundtrack. And after 4 o'clock, we have Patrick Frayn and Louise Bruton coming in to give us the lowdown on the Netflix reality TV show called Love is Blind. Everybody is talking about it. And according to the people at Netflix, it is number one in their top 10 in Ireland today. I've sort of binged on it last night, which wasn't very pleasant. I feel a bit of indigestion and everything else. Anyway, the idea is that they get a group of men and a group of women, they keep them apart, but they have these pods where the men and women go into, and they sort of do speed dating, but they can't see each other. They talk to each other through a wall. So they can't see each other. And then, amazingly, surprisingly, crazily, in less than 6 days, some of them propose to each other, having never seen each other. Love is blind, you see. So they make a deep emotional connection. And because of that, they think they want to spend the rest of their lives with this person. And then they're let out into the real world, and sometimes it works out with them, sometimes it doesn't, and then they have their wedding day. It's a mad, crazy reality TV show. It can only happen in America. And Patrick Frayn and Louise Bruton will be talking us through that after 4 o'clock. And we have live music from the Lost Brothers, which I'm really looking forward to. Now, you'll know by now, today's the 28th of February and tomorrow's the 29th, because it is a leap year. We have an extra day this year. Hey, you would think that's a positive thing, but for some people going, huh? Does that mean we have to work an extra day? Will we get paid for that? I don't know the answer to that question. I do know the answer to some questions surrounding the leap year. So the point of the leap year is to help adjust our Gregorian calendar. That's the 365-day calendar, to make it fit in with the solar calendar. So every 4 years, scientists have figured out that we're a day out of kilter. So to readjust and get us back in line with the sun and the planetary movements, we have an extra day in the year. That's why it happens. And sometimes that isn't even enough. So back in 2015, on June the 30th, they had a leap second. I don't remember that. I've no memory of that whatsoever. But they added or took away a second back in 2015. Do you remember that? No, you don't. How do you remember it's a leap year? Well, if the last two digits of the year are divisible by 4, then it's a leap year. Century years are the exception to this rule. They must be divisible by 400 to be a leap year. So 2000 and 2400 are leap years, but 2100 will not be one. Did you get all that? The other way to remember, of course, is that it's if the Olympics are on, it's a leap year. And how did the whole tradition of women proposing to men happen? Well, after Pope Gregory the VIII instituted the Gregorian calendar, which we've already spoke about in 1582, the idea of adding an extra day of the year seemed totally ridiculous to some people. And a man or a woman, I'd imagine it was a man, in England, wrote a play. And he joked that it was a day when women should trade their dresses for breeches and act like men. It was meant to be a satire on the whole ridiculousness of the whole thing. But some early feminists were inspired. And by the 1700s, women were using leap day, which is tomorrow, to propose to the men in their lives. All that is hugely interesting. But the 29th of February means only one thing to me. It is the birthday of my old pals. Zig and Zag. And I have to admit that I've been a little bit negligent over the last 8, 12, 16 years. And I've forgotten. And I spotted on Twitter that they were harassing me into calling them. And I was a bit embarrassed because I hadn't said happy birthday 4 years ago or maybe 8 years ago. So I'm going to try and make amends, redress the balance. So they don't know. They think they're holding out for some workman who's coming to work on their house or something like that up in Zog. They're holding on the line, so let's do it together. Happy birthday, Zig and Zag!
What? Hello?
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 Who's that?
This is Ray Darcy, your old mate.
Oh, it's Ray Darcy!
It's
yes.
Ray!
It's Ray Darcy! It's Ray Darcy! It's Ray Darcy!
Ray, that is so cool! Zig, oh. Ray Darcy, remember?
Hi, Ray!
Yeah, hi. You do remember me, don't you?
Yeah, I think so.
It's Ray. Of course he does, yeah. Ray.
Remember...
we're so excited.
Happy birthday.
Remember the last time you got us a cake and everything and it was on a different radio station and now you're on another radio station and we had cake and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Happy birthday. And I always feel so sorry for you because it only comes around every 4 years, your birthday.
Yeah, we've four times the fun.
Yeah. Aha.
Because it only comes around four times, you know, and then we get four times the presents.
Yeah, Ray. So it's kind of cool. We don't mind. It makes it extra special. Plus, we're only 8 years old.
Yeah. Well, happy 8th birthday. Zig.
Thanks, Ray.
It's great to talk to you again, Zig. I'm the guy who used to sit between you and your brother back in the day on Den TV. Remember?
He had hair back then.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, yeah. So when did you change your name?
No, that was Ian Dempsey. I'm Ray Darcy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Ray Darcy from Kildare.
That's it. You have me now. Yes.
Well done, Zig.
Come here. I love your new show where you don't know who the guest is.
No, that's Tommy Tiernan. That's Tommy Tiernan.
Oh,
that's a different.
That's
yeah.
Oh yeah, because that's really good.
Yeah. Thanks, Zig. I love you too. Do you still put
love
your?
You too, Dad. I mean, Ray. Oops.
Do you know what I love about you, Zig?
Has anyone seen the Lost Brothers? We're just putting out a call. Has anyone seen them? Nobody knows where they are.
Where are they?
They're lost, obviously. They're lost, yeah. Zig, and this won't work on radio, but one of my favorite things about you...
No, I know it's not working, Ray, is it?
It's just not working, Ray.
I mean, how many years has it been?
How many years has it been? 1994, I think, was it? No, we did Too Fat together. So it's...
We did 2 years of that. That was good fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was good crack. Get off the bike! Get off the bike! So that's 20 years ago. That's 20 years.
Wow.
My word.
Whoa.
I have to say, you look great.
Thanks, Ray.
Go on.
What?
Thanks, Ray.
What do you want?
No, but like, you know, when people say you look great, you sort of return the compliment.
But Ray, we can't lie. That's one of the things we don't do.
Yeah,
you know that, Ray.
Yeah, I know. Where are you now? I know you thought there was a man ringing and we tricked you into it, but it's a nice trick, isn't it? It's a nice secret.
Oh, it's very cool.
It is very cool.
He's going to fix the satellite dish.
Yeah, he's going to fix the satellite dish.
So we can get better reception for RTE programming.
Yeah. With that new show where the guy doesn't know who the guest is.
Yeah, that's Tommy Tiernan. Yeah.
Him.
But anyway, yeah, so we're back. We're on Planet Zog.
Yeah, right. So what's the plan for tomorrow, Zag? Are you going to play with some of your dolls or something like that? What will we be doing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Ray. I mean, and the great thing about playing with dolls nowadays is that it's completely cool. Yeah. Do you know, like, I've waited for many years to be able to dress up in whatever kind of crazy clothes I like and wear wigs and play with dolls, and it's totally cool now on Earth.
Your time has arrived, yeah.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
It's brilliant.
So, we're going to party like it's 1999, right? It's going to be all S Club 7 songs.
Great.
That's it.
Well, S Club's going to take you there. Ain't no party like an S Club party, because an S Club party don't stop.
I remember we played a sort of a dancey tune the other day, and I remember we used to do that thing called Ray's Rave.
Throw your hands in the air, like you just don't care.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Ray?
No, it reminded me of that. Just happy memories. It's like, that's all happy.
Yeah.
I'm getting a bit teary now. No, it's not the end.
Ease. Hey, Ray.
Yes.
Ray, where's Zuppy?
There's loads of questions coming in. Who is older? Where is Zuppy? Where is Socky? Where is Aunt Monica?
No, hang on, Ray.
Yes.
Ray, sorry. Where is Zuppy? Where is he?
No, I thought you
were
minding.
That's okay. We heard. I remember. He's on a farm in Kildare, so it's all cool.
Okay.
I think Ray's uncle owns the farm.
Oh. So he's on a farm in Kildare.
That's it, Zag. That's it, exactly. That's it.
Okay,
exactly.
Yeah. That's all you need to know, Zig.
Yeah.
You don't need to visit him, Zig.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Now, Socky. Where is Socky? Because I thought he was with you.
That is a good question.
Yeah.
Socky disappeared. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe he's with Tuppy.
Maybe
we
he
should
is.
Really go to that farm and make sure they're okay.
Let's not go to the farm.
The other thing is that
maybe he's with the Lost Brothers.
Maybe he is. Maybe he is. Now this is serious, right? This is serious for a moment.
Okay, right. Yeah, serious. Yeah.
Ted.
Oh,
unbelievable,
Ray. Yeah. If only. I mean, I don't know. Like Ted, he does appear every so often, Ray.
Yeah. And today isn't one of those days, is it? Because
I hope not. It might be tomorrow. The 29th is the most risky Ted day ever. So he needs to be vigilant.
He could ruin everything.
He could ruin the whole day.
Okay, so you be vigilant, I'll be vigilant. We'll all be vigilant together.
Ted Free Zone stickers. Yes. Everyone should put, if they have them, put them up now. Okay.
Put them up on your windows. Stick them to your windows so he doesn't come into your house.
I should know the answer to this question, but which of you is older?
I am. No, I am.
Obviously, I am. Zag is me.
If
I
I'm taller, it means I'm older.
Is taller older, Ray?
No, taller is not older, Zag. No, taller is not older. Yes.
You see, that's not true.
Because you started saying that you'd more spots.
I've more spots than
him. Well, you do, yes. Yeah, but Zag, I have to say, acts older. More mature, maybe.
I will take that as a compliment, Ray.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm still older.
Right. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Zig and Zag. We would never forget your birthday, even if it's only every 4 years, says David Kelly.
Oh, Dave.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, we'll be expecting the presents for the last 4 years. Thanks very much, Dave.
Yeah, I miss those voices. Great to hear Zig and Zag again. Thanks for the memories.
Oh, cool.
Thanks. That's nice. Thank you.
This is like, because it's the same time. It's 3 o'clock. This is like, you know, Bosco has just finished. Yeah. We're on the telly talking, having the chat.
Okay, we're on in 3 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I have my multicolored corduroy shirt on.
Nice.
It was great fun, Ray, wasn't it?
It was brilliant, wasn't it, Ray? And that, because that is that clip, isn't it? That clip with Mary Robinson. The day.
That keeps cropping up.
It does. So what are the plans? People would love to see you back on the television. I'd love to see you back on the telly. Is there any plans?
Well, I don't know. Like, we had our animation,
which was brilliant.
Show,
yeah.
Which was great fun. And then, but I don't know. I mean, I suppose it'd be cool if RT wanted to do. But those days are just different. TV's different now, Ray.
It is different. It is. Yeah. Sadly, so.
I mean,
it could bring
back continuity. It'd be really good.
Yeah, it's all steaming now and stuff.
Streaming.
Yeah, that's what's that. What?
Some of it is steaming.
Okay, stop pinching me then. Stop pinching.
Listen, I was on the Hairy Baby website recently and I spotted loads of brilliant Zig and Zag t-shirts and stuff.
That's right, Ray. We talked to the guys and they said they wanted to do some old school classic Zig and Zag stuff. So we gave them all the old designs and they made them and they're really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, this has been really special for me. I know it's your birthday, but it's been great chatting again on the airwaves.
Oh, it's been really good. And so cool. We didn't know you were going to call. Like, we were hoping you might do, because, like, you're the only presenter, Ian Dempsey, that remembers Ian Zag's birthday.
Listen, I you know, as well as the cake, I want to give you a present of music. So I have three songs from our time together. And you can choose which one we will play today. So, song one.
Okay,
song
that's
one is,
brilliant.
Okay, song one is this.
Oh.
Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit. Song two is this.
Oh, nice. Oh, baby.
That is, of course, Britney Spears, Baby One More Time. And song three is this. The New Radicals. And you get what you give. Hey!
Let's do that one, Ray. We like that a lot.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Okay, happy birthday, Zig and Zag. Happy birthday. That's the New Radicals as picked by Zig and Zag. You get what you give on RT Radio 1. 51551 for your texts. You can send emails to ray@rte.ie. We need them every Friday, says somebody. They should be back on the telly or the radio, 2FM somewhere, says somebody else. And amazing memories, needed that on a day when the news is so bleak. Thank you, says somebody else. And Zig and Zag sound like a crazy Jedward. Of course, Zig and Zag were around before Jedward were born. Don't quote me on that. I don't know if that's factually correct, but you know, it's a figure of speech. And love Zig and Zag, says Anne-Marie and Nace. They've shaped my sense of humour. I'm now in my 40s. I actually made a dough model, Play-Doh model of Zig and Zag all those years ago and saw them moving it one afternoon on the telly. So delighted. And I remember you hitting your head once when Ted jumped at you. Yeah, I've probably said this before, but of all the things we did on the Den over the years, that the thing that people most want to chat about is Ted and our fights. And you're right, I did bang my head one day and it was a pretty serious injury. There was blood. There was blood and there was dizziness and there could have been concussion. Should have been a HIA. Isn't that what they call them in rugby? Head injury assessment. And I love Zig and Zag. Sat in the office, 48-year-old, laughing away and remembering going into school, listening on my Walkman, currently listening through earbuds, says Catherine. And happy birthday, Zig and Zag. Your voices just make me feel like a child again. I was just doing the maths there, and this is going to scare you. It scared me. I started on the Den. We better go to a break after this because we'll all need a rest. 30 years ago.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Every Friday we invite somebody into Studio 10 and ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. Today's the turn of conductor David Brophy. How are you doing, David?
How's it going, Ray?
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
People will know you from, I suppose, High Hopes is where you came to most people's attention.
Yeah, I've been around before that.
I know you have. I know you have. But yeah,
I suppose that's most people probably saw that, and it was probably there was a bit of kind of zeitgeist about that. It happened at the right time. I think we were kind of. I don't think homelessness had been such a on the radar as much as it had been, and I think. When we were making the High Hope Square, and actually it was planning for 2 years before that, and homelessness wasn't what it is now. Like, I heard the homeless figures during the week. They're
over 10,000 again. This is people in emergency accommodation.
You know, yeah. But way back when when we made High Hopes like 6-7 years ago, it was different, you know. So I made High Hopes while doing other things like conducting orchestras. Like, it was kind of, I'm not saying it was a side thing, but it was.
And it's nearly 6 years old now, is it?
Yeah, it's about that, I think.
It's hard to believe. And the ripple effect of High Hopes is still continuing because I'm meeting people constantly who are saying.
Yeah, and High Hopes has its own energy now.
Yeah.
It's great, you know, like, because the one thing I had even before we made the programme was, like, just hope this choir keeps going, you know, like, and they keep going. And High Hopes now is a thing. You mentioned High Hopes and people know it's homelessness and singing in choirs, and that's what it is, you know. And I never thought that would be a thing, and it is a thing now. So, yeah, I suppose that's when it all happened.
It's the power of singing in a group.
And the thing is, I didn't trust it because I was initially approached by Tyrone in Tyrone Productions in Belfast to do it, and I kind of said no because I'd made a series before that. We got musicians to play with the RT Concert Orchestra, and I kind of went, I might take a break, I might not do anything for TV in a while, you know. And then Toronto Productions came back to me again a few months later and said, look, would you reconsider? And we thought about it again, and I didn't really trust the power of singing. It was only when I got in front of the people and they started singing, and you could see them within 2 or 3 rehearsals changing, like, you know. And I kind of had the crack, and I kind of, you know, I kind of went in on one level, I suppose I'm being asked to make a TV program, so I'm making a TV program, you know. But then I come, like, a tribute to the people in the choir, I forgot about everything and just had the crack with them.
And you see. And you.
I don't know about that, but I mean, no, but I'm too close to me to be able to say those things. No, you can say that, Ray.
But I can't say it. And I can say it because I've obviously prepared for this interview. So I know a lot more about you than I would have known.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll start at the very beginning. So you were born in 1972 in Holles Street.
Yes.
Mary, your mum, Liam, your dad.
Yes.
So how did they meet? Where were they from?
My mother would have grown up in Fairview, Drumcondra area. And my dad grew up in Walsh Road, Drumcondra. So they were kind of close together. And they met, I think, in what they would have called the Nevin, which was Glass Nevin Lawn Tennis Club, where there was a dance. You know, you meet dances, I presume, like, I don't know what, like, that was the 1960s. I think it would have met, might be 1967, 66 maybe. So that's how they met, and they got married and just did.
And what did they do?
My dad worked in the ESB, and he probably left after his intercert and then went in as electrical apprentice. and was a spark, and then went worked his way up through and eventually became electrical supervisor for the north side of the city. So he kind of just check if, I suppose, any jobs that were done on the north side, make sure they were done properly and supervise stuff on that, you know. And
so he always had electricity in the house anyway.
Yes, well, my dad would say, like, we remember we'd leave the lights, you know, everyone leaves the lights on. My dad would say, I only work for the ESB, I don't own it, he'd say, you know. I remember that phrase used an awful lot, like, I only work for the ESB, I don't own it. And so turn the lights off, you know, like, or stop having, like, you know, have a 5p share rather than, like, you know, a 20p share. And my mother would have, as far as I know, worked in an office and would have done, like, pimpy secretarial work, you know, like, but then, you know, as, like, a lot of women then, kids arrived and then she stayed at home.
How many kids?
There's me and my brother John, who, he has a proper job, not like me, he's a postman.
Okay.
He kind of goes out and does real work rather than being a musician, you know, so.
What's your first living memory?
Oh, God. I don't know, and I was asked this yesterday by Neil, the researcher, and then I had other ones that came up from yesterday.
But one, you don't have to stick to the one you told Neil.
I actually had one last night, which was, I think when my mother was having my brother, I'm the elder of the two of us, my aunt Betty was looking after me, and I grew up in Santry, and we walked up to the Terrace Shopping Centre of Ballymun, and myself and my aunt, Auntie Betty, who's my godmother, and I got lost. I wandered off. I think I was probably an adventurous type, potentially. And she freaked, as you would do. Anyone's lost a small child, 3-year-old. I would have been 3 at the time. And she went to the police, and they went driving around Ballymun looking for me, and they found me hanging out with a pile of kids from the travelling community and horses, like, somewhere in North Ballymun, and not a bother on me, like, late at night, you know, and they took me home and it was grand, you know.
Right. But at, I think, 3.
At 3. Yeah. So I kind of vaguely remember that. And there was other things, like, I was a mad fan of Lego. I think there was a story, I don't really remember this, my dad tells that we were on the floor playing Lego, and my dad was down playing with us, and he put, like, a piece of Lego on the airplane or something I was making, and I didn't even look at him, and I just said to him, that doesn't go there, you effing idiot, you. And of course, my mother just absolutely corpse laughed, my dad corpse laughing, and I obviously had heard the words, somebody used it, and just, you know, kids do that, you know, like, I just said it out loud, you know. And they're probably...
You're building up a picture. We're less than 5 minutes in, and you're wayward already.
I don't know. I mean, I was wayward and not. I don't know. Maybe wayward's not the right term. Maybe adventurous.
Right. Okay.
And probably a bit single-minded and a bit too independent for my own good, really. You know.
Okay.
So I kind of That's.
And can you remember any jealousy because you were 3? You had been king of your own little castle of there.
My territory being encroached upon. Not really. No. I don't think so. No. And
stories are told. No.
I don't think not. No. They haven't been told to me. So that doesn't mean they're not being told in circles elsewhere, Ray, you know. So, no, I don't think so. And certainly my brother arrived. I think I was happy with the company more than anything else, you know.
And 2 was a small enough family back in the 70s.
Yeah. My mother was 1 of 8.
Yeah.
And my dad was 1 of 3. And so, yeah, 2, I don't know.
I
have to ask them.
What
happened? You know, I don't know if anything happened. You know, maybe I was enough. Maybe I got lost from a 3. My mother said, we're not doing any more of this madness. So maybe that was me. Maybe I was the reason there were 2. I don't know what that is.
David Brophy, conductor and contraceptive.
Unknowns to himself and anybody else. My God.
Was it a musical house?
Not really. I don't think so. Like, look at, like, my mother certainly... I have very strong memories of a Johnny Mathis LP. On Christmas Day, when the turkey was being battered in the kitchen, Johnny Mathis was put on singing Christmas songs. And
it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
This is it. This is the song. It was playing in our house on Christmas Day. But there was, like, beyond that, there wasn't a huge amount of music, you know. Now, my dad bought, you know, the way, like, I don't think it happens nowadays, but, like, in January, like, after Christmas, they'd have these periodicals, like, every month, and they might have the great composers, like, January.
Yes.
February would be Schubert.
Yeah, you get the first one for 99p.
Yeah, type of thing, you know, yeah. And he bought Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which was never played, but I played it. I saw it when I was, like, 14, and just put it on the turntable and just played it, you know, like, one day. But, and then my folks used to go to, they'd go to James Last. That was the kind of the vibe the house. Yeah. But they never sang songs. You know when you talk about...
There was no musical instruments.
There was no musical instruments. The house... there might have been a guitar at one stage. maybe, but I don't know where it came from. But there was no way that we talked to people and say, oh, we'd all get together as a family at Christmas and have a sing-song. Yeah. That never happened. Right. There was no sing-songs in our house, you know. And I don't actually think I've ever heard my mother singing. I think I've heard my dad sing the odd time.
Right.
Like that. So that's kind of, I'm certainly a black sheep somewhere.
You mentioned Beethoven's Fifth, so we can't give that a mention without playing a bit of it.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Hit it.
Woo!
Oh, it's deadly. I love it every single time. Great music. And everyone knows it as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird when you listen to it. Like, you know, if you play it, and I've played, like, I've done Lost It. I've been teaching my whole life, you know, when you go into schools and you play those first four notes, you know, and kids go, a lot of kids, like, you kind of say, that's by Beethoven, you know, and I kind of wonder, how do they know that stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they do know that stuff. It's kind of an iconic piece of music.
And it was discified in the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever and all that was a big thing, you know, like, and yeah, it was actually very clever, that disco.
And conducting a thing like that.
Conducting a thing like that, yeah. I don't know. Like, I presume I was one of those kids. I mean, everyone's probably at home, put on their Beethoven 5 and just like wave their arms around. Like, and just said, here I am conducting the orchestra. I line my teddies up, like in the first violins or something, like, you know. No, I don't know where they like the conducting thing wasn't a thing when I was small at all. I think
we'll get to that later. We'll move on.
Okay.
So you said you were adventurous. And
the
F in Egypt and going off on your poor Auntie Betty, scaring the living daylights
poor
out
Betty,
of her.
Yeah, God.
And then in school, then, were you a gregarious type of person?
No. Like most people who perform and are involved in any sort of performing arts, I was probably pretty shy, you know. And I didn't enjoy, I hated school. Like, really, really hated it. And I honestly would say, hand on heart, one of the best days of my life was when I left school.
Okay.
I was probably like a lot of people, I was bullied a lot in school and I found school to be a kind of a hostile place. And like my very first day in school, in primary school actually, so junior infants, we used to call it low babies.
Yeah.
There was a teacher who used to refer to people who tried to escape from the class as escapees. And I came home to my mother and said, Mum, there was a few escapees today. Assuming that my mother and everyone knew what escapees were, my mother said, what are you talking about, you know? And she used to, my first primary school teacher, in junior infants said that some of the kids were trying to escape. I definitely remember one, this is a really strong memory from 4 years of age, September 1976, when there was one of the kids in the class on the very first day of school, lashed out, went mental, like berserk, shouting and screaming and kicking the teacher, and the teacher trying to manhandle the child, stay in the class, probably with a parent or somebody. And all of us, like 30-something four-year-olds sitting
witnessing
watching this.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, is this the way my school life's going to be? Is this what school's about? Like, you've no idea on your first day of school. Your first day of school is the first day of 14 years of schooling, and it's kind of an important day. And that was my first day of school. And I won't say I didn't recover from that, but my whole sense of school was that it was a stressful place to be. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. And I'm not saying, like, when I say it was bullied, it wasn't bad. I'm lucky that, like, it wasn't disastrous and I didn't have any, I don't think any big major mental health issues or anything like that. But I certainly remember school being a hostile place.
And have you analysed over the years since then, you know, it's obviously the bully's fault, but, you know, why me sort of thing?
Well, I don't agree with that. Actually, I'm not convinced. I think bully's probably, I think everybody is intrinsically good. Everybody, actually. And I would imagine that people bully because they have conflict in their life as well.
Yeah, of course. They're still bullying you.
They're still bullying me.
Yes, yes.
Here I was scrawny, skinny. So it was called skinny willings and big ears and all the things I was called, you know, because my ears are a little bit big. And
I'm from a family of big eared people. So.
So they do. So and I was called skinny willings and big ears, and I kind of was spotty teenager and all that. So I had all that stuff and I was really big. But I think once I was certainly scrawny looking. So I'd get like all the bigger lads would come over and hit me a box. There was certainly violence.
You?
Yeah. Oh, I remember there was, and I found primary school confusing because there was a couple of people in my class who'd come over and they'd hit you a box. They'd kind of wind you in the stomach. You'd be winded a little bit, you know. Yeah. And then they'd come over like 10 seconds later and put their arm around and say, I'm only messing with you. That's a very Irish thing. I'm only messing with you, you know. Mm. And that, I found school life kind of confusing, actually. And you can understand it when you think about somebody's going to hit you a box. And then 10 seconds later.
But wasn't that the thing? Like, I can remember clearly one of the school bullies in my primary school. And you never knew what way he was going to react.
And
yes,
you've hit the nail on the head. I kind of felt all through my primary school a little knot in my stomach in the morning, because you go into school and you kind of, what way is it going to fall today? And the school bell would ring at the end of the day and go, there's another one done, you know. And that's not a good place to be for
no.
a kid. And I'm not the only one. There's loads of it.
No.
It's going on today, actually, you know.
And where were you getting respite then? No, but like at home, was it?
You make it sound it was going on blind in the dark.
No, but no, but you're like,
where's my respite? No, there was good things happening in school as well. Right. I mean, it wasn't all bad, you know. But it was an underlying sense of tension there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I love playing football, and my friends on the road in Shannon Park, where I grew up, we played football all through the summer, and they were the days, very different to my kids nowadays, where in the summer holidays, I would get up and have breakfast, and we'd leave the house at half nine, and we'd arrive back at 5 o'clock in the evening. Yeah. We had lunch somewhere, I don't know where we had lunch, go to somebody's house and have a sandwich or something like that. And we'd go off, like, we were close. If you imagine where DCU is now, that was the National NIHG at the time, or Albert College, and that was all open fields, like where the DCU is now. And I used to go down, we'd play football down there. I used to bring golf clubs down, I'd play pitch and putt. My granddad was a golfer, and I just spend the day playing sport during the summer, you know. And we just spend endless time playing sport, so you just disappear, you know. So
and then during the winter, of course, there was the telly. We have a number of the theme telly, tunes here.
People remember this. It's hard to believe that, like, a TV's broken has a recorder tune.
Wait,
a recorder, like a recorder, the most uncool instrument.
I never knew that. That's thank you. That's my piece of information to take
recorder,
away from this.
It's a recorder, and I'm kind of listening to it there and going, that's a recorder playing like a kids' TV tune. Like, why would you have that? You know, because we brought recorders into school. I'm not playing that bleeding recorder. I want to play guitar, electric guitar, drums, or something, like, you know. So that's the theme for Blue Peter.
And you were on it. No,
well, I wasn't on it.
I know.
I was one of those Shadows who won a Blue Peter badge, because I was into art and drawing when I was younger, and they used to have this competition every Christmas where you could design the inside cover of the Blue Peter annual, and of course Santa Claus brought me the Blue Peter annual every single Christmas, and so I entered it. And there was a kind of a short list of, you know, in the studio, they put the board up and they'd stick them up on the board. They'd go in and look at them, and this is a good one, like an art gallery. Well, I appeared on the board and I got a Blue Peter badge, which is probably somewhere in my mother's house, my dad's house somewhere. I don't know where it is, you know.
That's a moment, though, isn't it? What age were you?
Maybe it was about 10.
Okay.
About 10 or something.
That is a moment in a 10-year-old's life.
Is that a moment?
Like, people still come up to me and go, I was on, you know, you showed my picture of the den.
I suppose.
Blue Peter Smile badge. Of the Week or whatever.
Yeah, Blue Peter badge was the thing, to get a Blue Peter and a letter with the BBC thing on it.
You should have been watching RT. Anyway.
You're right, of course. You're bloody right. You weren't done at that time, though.
No, right.
That was it. That was more than 30 years ago when you started doing the dead. God.
In all the years we've been doing soundtrack, nobody's ever picked Tom
and Jerry.
Somebody
said that before I came in. Yeah. No one picked Tom and Jerry. It's madness. And, well, Tom and Jerry was like, there was obviously cartoons you looked at on your own. So I'd watch, like, Danger Mouse or something on my own, because my folks wouldn't watch that. But Tom and Jerry seemed to be like a family cartoon where my dad watch it and just completely fall around the place laughing, you know, like old style slapstick comedy, you know.
Violence.
My granddad watched violence, This is how they really do it, bro. on the television and the cartoon land, violence, yeah.
You mentioned Danger Mouse, might as well give it
Danger
a spin.
Danger Mouse, yeah. These things don't bring back memories. I love it.
What instrument is that playing now?
Well, there's brass instruments there. You've got the cans on. I should put my cans on. I haven't put my cans on. How the hell can I hear?
Headphones for people at home.
Oh, I love it. There's brass and there's flutes going crazy there. And there's a woman singing a song. He's the greatest. Such swashbuckling stuff. It's great. I love it. Oh, yeah.
Good luck.
It brings back all the memories. Good luck. That's the end of this.
It must be great fun, though, writing theme tunes.
I mean, I've obviously never written theme tunes. I've written stuff in my before, and I've composed stuff on that, but I've never written theme tunes like that. Yeah, I can imagine. I just love, the notion of, you know, actually, I'm coming up in a few months' time, I'm going to be recording a new Riverdance film.
Go on, Riverdance film. What?
Yeah, it's an animated film. Maybe I shouldn't be saying
this. Great. There you go. Get the pressing information on that.
And I was talking to Bill Whelan a few weeks ago, and he's looking at stems or bits of the animation that we've done already, and he's writing music for it, you know. And I get very excited when I think about that. Like, you get a piece of film that has nothing on it, that no sound is on it. So somebody got the Danger Mouse, like, open title, and said, will you put a bit of music to that? And they sat down and put something together like that. I just love the
sound. So it's an animation for Riverdance.
Animation Riverdance. Yeah,
that's
and
pretty exciting,
isn't it? The RT Concert Orchestra in May,
Right.
You release sometime later. And it's
How long is it?
It's a full feature-length animated film.
Is it?
Yeah.
So we're talking Fantasia, sort of.
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Fantasia?
No, I've seen Fantasia. I haven't seen that bloody Riverdance.
You haven't seen Riverdance thing?
No,
yeah.
I haven't seen the new film. It's like, I think it's only barely finished. And I know I spoke to Bill a few weeks ago and he was writing stuff for it. I love the notion of, like, you talk about Danger Mouse there. Imagine getting that animated stuff in front of you the first day and saying, what am I going to write for this?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know what to do.
Writing things and writing flute things and a song and writing the words. I just love that. That completely floats my boat, you know, I love it.
Dave Rovey is our guest today on Soundtrack to Your Life. We're going to talk to David Moore after a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Taking care of your winter coughs and colds at All Care, your local community pharmacy. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We got to talk about Seneca.
Seneca. Look, there you go. How did that happen? We went from Zig and Zag to Seneca. That's mad. In less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Well done, David Brophy.
I don't know what that means.
You introduced Seneca to people who don't know him.
We were talking about philosophy at the break.
Yeah.
You were saying Jenny was reading something about philosopher.
Yeah,
philosophers.
Yeah.
And I was saying, what philosopher was she reading about? And you said she's reading about the Stoicism or the Stoics.
Yeah.
You know? And the founding father of the Stoics, I just happen to know, is Seneca.
Yeah.
He's an amazing man. And the philosopher I read most nowadays is a guy called Nassim Nicholas Taleb, and he's an amazing guy. And his favourite philosopher is Seneca. But we shouldn't talk about Seneca anymore because we'll end up talking about philosophers for.
But why did you go to it?
I don't know. I think possibly because I think, like most people in my teens, my 20s, I kind of moved away from the church. Is that the right phrase to use? Like organized religion.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go through a phase where you're kind of, I felt maybe a little bit of limbo. You kind of have to believe in something. You can't spend your whole life believing nothing, you know. So I kind of start reading. I got a book on philosophy and reading about everybody from, you know, Seneca to Immanuel Kant and to all sorts of other philosophers and the French philosophers of the Enlightenment of the 18th century, you know, and read a lot of it and kind of go, oh, that's interesting. And then you find out kind of what you agree with and what you disagree with. And there was a great program actually on RTE. You're slagging me for not watching RTE. There was a great program on RTE, I think maybe I might even repeat last year, called Future Visions, about the future of Ireland. And what's his name? Dr. Robert Grant, who teaches in philosophy in Trinity College, he was in favour of philosophy being brought into primary schools.
Right.
They showed part of the programme was, I think it was Balbriggan and Educate Together, who they brought in philosophy for the primary school students. And I'm thinking back to my first day at school. And I was thinking, my God, if that kid had gone mentally, just let him escape.
Yes.
Talk to the rest of us about like philosophy and what we believe in, how to be compassionate and nice to people, all that type of thing. Maybe my school life would have been completely different if I had philosophy in it. So
you started reading philosophy in your teen years. How were your...
No, later, I'd say.
Later.
20s, I'd say.
Okay,
I moved
okay.
away from the church in my teen years and 20s.
Right.
And then kind of maybe like late 20s, maybe 30s, early 30s, I might have kind of said, I've got to believe in something. I mean, I don't go.
What were your teenage years like? Not good.
I went very quiet. I didn't enjoy primary school, and I kind of foolishly thought when I went to secondary school things would improve greatly. And they did marginally, but not a lot. And then I kind of went quiet then, you know. Like a lot of teenagers go quiet. And then I took up the piano when I was 13, and then I loved the piano. It was kind of my outlet. But I kind of stopped.
And was it that you weren't academic, or was the bullying continuing, or
it was bullying? Bullying was continuing, and I kind of felt it's not that I wasn't academic. I think I associated school with kind of tension. I think I was tense.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I was tense, you know. And as we spoke earlier about like that knot in the stomach in the morning, you go to school, and
that continued in secondary school. Yeah.
And it kind of not all the way through. I think once the junior cert, my intercert was done, I was then playing the keyboards. That's how I was playing in bands. So my share price went a bit high as a result, because I'm kind of slightly more cool now. You know, I was certainly uncool as a 12, 13, 14-year-old, you know.
What, to be playing in?
Well, yeah, I was kind of, when I started playing the piano at 13, well, you're playing the piano, oh, you must be gay. There was a bit of that, you know. You're making a face at me now.
Yeah.
That's the truth. I make the same face. That actually happened, you know. Like, and then, like, on top of that, I remember clearly when I was going to my first piano lessons that my...
And this is the 80s. This is the 80s now.
This is 85,
yeah,
84,
yeah.
85, probably I started playing the piano. And then I remember my dad got his sister's, Colette's, my auntie Colette's music case. Remember the old music cases with the steel bar that goes over the... Yes. Leather. There's a leather kind of handle and a steel bar. And it was a really good, she used it. She went to piano lessons back in the, whatever the day, the 60s or maybe the, probably before that, maybe 50s. And I got that case. And her name is Colette Brophy, and CB embossed on it, you know. So I was gay playing the piano, but I was doubly gay with this. Like, you know.
That monochrome music case.
Yeah, all that. I kind of, I don't know, maybe it was just... And then people would say...
Monogrammed.
And people would kind of say, oh, you know, you need to toughen up or you're just a bit soft or something. And maybe I was, you know. Mm. But I kind of felt, I did feel for a lot of my time, why are you at me? Why are you at me? Why don't you just leave me alone and let me do my thing? You
know? Yeah, and your thing then was music. Was it that you had to find that? Because a lot of people who are musicians who I talk to, there was a well-established tradition of music in their family.
Yeah.
You know, and they did have those sing songs and they did have musical instruments all over the place.
It comes from somewhere.
Yes,
It doesn't just come out from nowhere. Yes. It grows from the ground up, you know. Like, whereas me, I'm a complete black sheep. I remember when I was probably about 10 or 11, and we were at Mass, and it was announced off the pulpit that the Greenfield Boys Singers were looking for kids to join. And my dad said, oh, the guy who runs that, Kevin Scully, great man, he lives down the road, you should join the choir. And I just played football all the time, and I said, I don't really want to join the choir. And it was kind of, I won't say I was forced into the choir, but joined the choir. And I joined the choir, and I saw the piano player in the choir, and I went, that looks kind of cool, playing the piano. I want to learn the piano. And my mother, who was fantastic, I went to my mother and said, I want to get piano lessons with the fellow who plays piano for the choir. And my mother said, well, if you're going to get piano lessons, you're going to go to somebody qualified. And everyone, all my friends were gone to the fellow who was playing the piano for the choir.
Right.
He was a great piano player, fantastic, you know. But my mother said, you're going to go to somebody qualified. And I kicked up a stink. I want to go to the fellow that everyone else is going to and play Chariots of Fire. They were all learning Chariots of Fire, you know. My mother kind of put the foot down. She was brilliant, fantastic. And she said, no, you're going to go to somebody qualified. So we went to a guy called Daniel Walsh, who still lives and still operates up on Ballymun Avenue or Glasnevin Avenue. And I went to him and he was great. But we ended up doing, like, inverted commas, classical music.
How'd you feel about that?
I just didn't know the difference. It was just music. I wanted to play the piano and I loved it.
Right.
Like, I remember playing like Mozart little minuets when I was like 13, 14, loving it. Like, you know, I had no prejudice at all or no sense.
And was there a natural talent?
I like to ask me questions. How the hell am I meant to know that? I don't know. I'm still here. I'm still doing it. Like, it must be. I presume there was something.
You must have enough self-awareness.
I mean, I worked hard as well.
Yes,
you know, like,
okay,
so it's
right.
hard there's to get the balance between what. There's a bit of both. You know,
like, and you could sing. So will you tell us the significance of this particular song? This isn't you. I should point out. This isn't you singing.
I kind of.
It's Pavarotti.
This is unreal. This is classic. This says a bit about me. I went to college.
Let them hear a bit of it. O Sole Mio.
Right, so here's the story with O Sole Mio. My folks were saying, would you go to college? And I didn't want to go to college because I hated school. I didn't want to do anything, just want to get a good job or just whatever. And I was... When in kind of fifth year, I had a fantastic art teacher in my secondary school, Nicholas Moran, and I was preparing a portfolio to go to NCAD, possibly do furniture design. And a few months before my leaving cert, Nicholas Moran said to me, my art teacher said, what do you do when you go home after school? I said, the first thing I do is play the piano. And he said to me, dead seriously, don't do art. What? So I went home to my folks and said, my art teacher said, don't do art. And my mother was going, what the hell is that? Like, so there's a crisis meeting. Like, what are you going to do? And I said, maybe do music. So we had my piano teacher come down to the house for like serious tea and egg mayonnaise sandwiches and apple tart for a chat about all this. What are we going to do with this young fella here? Like, you know, who suddenly, like 6 weeks before I was leaving, is not doing art anymore. The great plan has been torn apart. So he said, look, he could take a year out. I had grade 4 piano at the time. Terrible. Like, nowhere near standard, you know, to do anything. He said he could take a year out and practice like a lunatic, which I did for a year after school. And thanks be to God for my parents who had the patience to go, okay, take a year off. And I was disciplined. That's the one thing. I kind of am disciplined. That's the
driven,
one
I'm determined.
Determined and disciplined. Yeah. I have that. I know I definitely have that.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to cross you for a minute. From your experience of life, do you think there are a lot of people who went on and did art. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That happens
yes.
a lot, does it?
Yeah, I think a lot of I'm lucky. There's a lot of chance in life.
Yes.
And things happen and somebody says something to you. Like, I know if Nicholas Moran hadn't said that to me, I would, probably would have gone to NCAD
yeah.
and God knows what I'd be doing now. Like, you know, I wouldn't be doing this. So life is about chances, but it's also about seizing your chances as well. So I kind of felt there's a chance here to go. I couldn't believe you'd go off and do a degree in music. I didn't know that such a thing existed. So I was like, delighted myself, you know. Took a year out, practiced 6 hours a day at the piano, like religiously, was really regimented about it. Got grade 8 distinction in piano at the end, went on to diploma and then went on to degree. So I'm in the College of Music and I'm 19 at this stage because I've had to catch up a little bit. And there was a great porter in Chatham Row called Brian. Brian was a great guy. And somebody from probably 98 FM went into the porter's desk, the reception in Chatham Row, and said to Brian, we're looking for a tenor to sing O Sole Mio. Now, this was 1990, so Italia 90.
Okay.
And
yes,
everything was Italian yeah. that summer. You know what I mean? Every media outlet was doing something Italian. So 98 FM were having a pasta eating competition outside the Gresham on O'Connor Street, 8 o'clock on a Friday morning. This is as true as you're there, Ray. And this woman went in to the porter in Chatham Row and said, is there anyone who's a tenor here to sing O Sole Mio? And Brian, who was a great guy, but wouldn't have been a musician. So I happened to be walking by. He said, Dave, you sing tenor, don't you? And I went, yeah, because I sang tenor in the choir. There's a woman here looking for a tenor. And I spoke to her and I went, so it's true as God, 2 weeks later, I ended up singing live on 98 FM, like singing this, except not as good as this. Not as good. It was reasonable. Now, it was background music because the people eating pasta at the time, see, this sounded like tomato sauce.
Slurping.
And onion slurping and pasta. And we had a cellist and a flautist or something with us as well.
That's brilliant.
So that maybe says a bit about me, yeah. which is kind of shocking.
We've sort of brought you up nearly to the conducting. What age did the conducting start?
Well, I was kind of, I left college when I was like 22, 23. And then I got a job with the National Chamber Choir, who are now called Chamber Choir Ireland, as apprentice conductor probably when I was 24.
Yeah.
Like a 2-year contract, and that was amazing. I learned an awful lot with them. And then, you know, there was two schools of thought. Like, there's no rule book for learning to conduct. You don't go to college and then apply for a job in the paper, you know, looking for a conductor, you know. It doesn't work like that. So I was very keen on getting lessons first. So I kind of kept my, I don't know, kept my cards close to my chest. I didn't want to go and conduct when I wasn't ready for it. So I didn't really conduct professionally until I was 29 in front of orchestras. And the great thing about Ireland and about RTE is that the RTE Concert Orchestra and the National Symphony Orchestra, they give you a go. Like, they keep their ear to the ground. Who's out working, you know? And you get a lunchtime.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen everywhere, you know? And it's a great credit to RTE they do that.
And it's real.
And it's real. Yeah. You're in front of real professional musicians who are fantastic. And our orchestras here are fantastic. The two RTE orchestras are absolutely fantastic. And I got a go. I got brought in for a conductor's trial with the RTE Concert Orchestra and was booked that day to do a lunchtime concert.
Isn't there are texts about you,
okay.
which I want to read to you.
Okay.
But I have to get a commercial break in, so I'll go to that now.
Okay.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Taking care of all the vitamin advice you need for a healthier you at All Care, your local community pharmacy. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
David Brophy, that was so enjoyable, I have to say. I really enjoyed that. It flew in. David is such a nice man and a treat to watch on stage. So that person, please say thanks to your guest, David, for his enthusiasm and energy he brings to everything. I'd love to see him make a TV programme on music for the uninitiated.
Oh, yeah, we should.
I'd co-present it with you because...
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'd co-present it with
you. Let's do it. We'd have the crack.
Is your man's name, is it James Rhodes or David Rhodes? What's his name? Yeah, he's a pianist, classical pianist.
James Rhodes.
He's a great.
His book, he did a series on Channel 4.
Did he? Yeah, he's an amazing man.
Mental health and music was
yes.
an amazing guy.
Yeah,
like
amazing guy.
Yes.
So there's something there. Anyway, David Brophy, such a gentleman. He treated me so well when I sang "Born Free" with the RTE Concert Orchestra once during a competition. Says Nicky in Kilkenny. Yeah. David Brophy, such an inspirational musician, conductor, fantastic at any workshops. Oh. So full of energy. Love his enthusiasm. Says Maura, and love listening to David speaking about music. His passion for it really manages to bring people closer to music they may not have listened to previously, says Stuart. He's a great man. There you go, says Tristan. His work with the homeless on TV shows showed a really loving person dealing with people with great dignity and honesty.
Thank you.
There aren't many like him, so I thought I'd email my thoughts. That's Tristan. There
thanks, Tristan. That's nice.
Isn't that lovely?
God.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. So music for the uninitiated. We'll have to come up with a better title.
Yeah, we'll miss. It doesn't try quite trip off the tongue maybe so well. We'll find something. Yeah, we should do it though. Yeah.
Dave,
thanks.
Thank
pleasure.
You very much.
Complete
thank
pleasure.
Anish Doshan and the Free Skeleton and Oak to Le Seamus O'Scanlon. Thanks, Greg. Thanks very much, Gormagod Seamus. 51551 for texts or radrt.ie for emails. Now, we're going to be talking with Patrick Frayne and Louise Bruton about Love is Blind, which is the most talked about TV programme at the moment. It's on Netflix and they're saying that it's number one in Ireland today. So that's what they're saying. And if you're probably going to be stuck in over the weekend because the weather from Storm Jorge, is that the correct pronunciation? I think Jorge. We actually got on to the guy, one of the guys who does the weather over in Network 2, and we asked him to give us the correct pronunciation.
Hey guys, so it's Storm Jorge.
Jorge.
Storm Jorge.
Thanks very much. That's Stephen there, Stephen Daly. Storm Jorge. So you'd probably be indoors over the weekend and you might decide to binge watch Love is Blind. So we have Patrick and Louise going to talk us through that. But before that, the Lost Brothers are behind Patrick and Louise. Good to see you, Mark and Oisín.
How's it going, Ray?
Good. The new album, After the Fire, After the Rain, it's lovely, it's relaxed, it's there's something really earthy about it.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah. And it's getting great reviews.
Yeah, no, we're delighted. It's 12 years rehearsing, you know. 6 albums. But yeah, no, we're thrilled with the reaction of this one. Yeah.
We're glad to actually hear you say you like Ash Wednesday, that song.
It's an instrumental on it, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a you know, we want to cash in on Ash Wednesday. There's a million Christmas songs, or there's a million, you know, birthday songs.
Angle.
But you don't even, it's instrumental, so Ash Wednesday isn't mentioned in it.
I know. Yeah. We actually try to write lyrics for some of these instrumentals and then we ditch them.
Yeah. And there's a lovely whistle in it.
Yeah.
Who is that? Is that you or Mark?
So we did the track, we went in the studio booth and we all tried to whistle. You know, we were all trying to be that guy in the credits, leave notes, whistle. But we all failed, so we emailed a friend in Portland called Mike Kirkendall, a great producer, and he's the master whistler. And he emailed the whistle, I'm afraid.
Over to you.
It's not very earthy, is it? But he's a great Portland, Oregon musician, and he has that. We've worked with Mike, actually, on our first album, and we were delighted. And yeah, one take, he said.
Patrick Frayne, can you whistle? Not very musical. Louise Bruton.
It's tone deaf, but...
Oh, yeah, that's...
That's the kind of inhaled
whistle. Mark, let's hear your... All right. Oisín. You win the prize. Okay, so After the Fire, After the Rain, Heather has been on. She says, delighted to hear you'll have the Lost Brothers on. Found them recently, just listening to their new album, After the Fire, After the Rain. Ash Wednesday is a track to calm and focus anyone. So Heather likes it too.
Perfect. Oh, hi, Heather.
Yeah, there you go.
And it was Ash Wednesday 2 days ago.
Yes, but you're not going to play that or whistle for us that because you don't have the man from wherever he is. What are you going to sing for us?
We're going to sing After the Fire, the title track. After the fire, the liar was no more. Pain face down and withered on the floor after the fire. After the fire. After the fire, they found ashes near the wheel. At the grief seminar, they said your loss is real after the fire. After the fire. After the fire came the hard and blowing storm. Like dying embers that prove to warm. But after the fire things were never the same. Feelings realized, priorities changed down to the wire. After the fire. After the fire came the hard and crashing rains. At the belief seminar, they said to face the pain. After the fire, the memory thief gone. The chief of sorrow has been warned, guns for hire.
after the fire, after the fire, after the fire.
That's lovely. The Lost Brothers, After the Fire, After the Rain is the album, and you're on tour. People can find out all the dates on thelostbrothersband.com. But to mention OMA on the 19th of March, Belfast the 20th, 21st, Vicar Street in Dublin, and you're on to Galway, Castlebar, Letterkenny, Waterford, Cork and Limerick. And you're going to stay with us today and you're going to sing us out at the end of the programme. Nice. For the moment, Lost Brothers, thank you very much.
Cheers,
thank you.
Ray.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
There you go. Yeah, we're back on. Yeah, Lost Brothers will be back with us before the end of the programme. Now, Love is Blind is on Netflix at the moment. It's got people talking. It sees couples fall in love and commit to marriage before they even see each other. Yes, they don't even see each other and they propose to each other, some of them within 4 days. Patrick Frayne and Louise Bruton have binged on the series. They've watched 10 hours. Not for us, they were doing it anyway. So, Patrick Frayne, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Louise Bruton, good to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, is this a new level of craziness in reality TV, Louise?
Yeah, absolutely. For the first 4 episodes, I think every 30 seconds I was going, this is crazy. This is crazy. I couldn't even catch up. I couldn't even set myself with the standard of insanity that the show began with, because they'd constantly outdo themselves. I couldn't keep up with just how quickly people were devoting themselves to walls. They were just devoting their love and affection to a blank wall.
So will you just describe it to people who haven't seen it?
So there's a big long corridor that the men and women split off into, and they each get their own private pod. And the pod is exactly what you think a pod is. It is a pod. And they sit there guzzling wine. They're always guzzling wine. And they talk through a wall to a person on the other side and ask things like, where are you from? And where they're from will make them fall in love with each other. Or or whether or not they believe in God, which they all do, because there's quite a strong Christian undercurrent to this show.
It's a really strange... There's a lot of things that I haven't seen on reality TV before. The number of Christians was kind of new and fascinates me. The amount of wine being guzzled...
It's
the drunkest reality show I've seen.
And it's the most note-taking I've ever seen in a reality TV show.
Oh yeah, they have little books. Like, I have a little book here for my notes for this. And like, they have little books that they're constantly taking notes in. And what's kind of weird, like what makes it so compelling is the insanity of the premise, which is two premises. One is that you're going to fall in love with someone without seeing them, which is kind of interesting, I guess, in its own way. Then the second thing is you're going to commit to marriage and get married within 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So what happens is...
the only way to get to see them is to propose.
Yeah. So you don't get to see them.
So that's your gateway to see what the person looks like on the other side.
And they can date everybody. So they start with, is it 10 or 12? And so they can sort of speed date everybody.
How many there are at the start, and you don't even meet.
Some people just fall off as well. Yeah. Like there was one guy that announced in the first episode that he's a 41-year-old virgin, and then he's never heard from again.
So it's they don't even say how many, I think. And you're introduced to all these people, and then the ones that it stays with are the people who've kind of made some sort of connection. And I find the whole thing slightly insane, because... Mm. The committing to marriage is one thing, but also you'd think that there'd be a wider type of body type, but everyone is conventionally attractive, which is the other weird thing.
Defeats the name, Love is Blind.
Slightly defeats the name of it, because nobody is going to like be surprised by someone bizarre on the other side of the wall, because everybody looks like they come from a reality TV show in the first place.
Yes, they do. They do. They all like could probably make some level of a Love Island.
Oh,
no, they wouldn't.
They wouldn't be love. They wouldn't be kind of Instagram influencers by this stage. But I'd say they maybe went to the same after work bar on a Friday night and just picked out this group of general managers and content creators.
That's the other thing that's fascinating, is they are not Instagram people or children of celebrities, the type of people that you often see in British reality TV shows now. They're all like sales managers
and content creators. Fame doesn't seem to be
driving them. So they sign up to this premise that they won't see this person.
Yeah.
And then they will propose them because they strike up some deep emotional connection.
In
a few days.
Yeah.
Some of them had it immediately as well.
Yeah.
Well, one guy, Mark, says that you had me at hey. He kept repeating that.
He loves that word. Like, they bonded, as far as I can see, over the fact they were from Chicago.
Yeah. And that and seems to be they both support the Cubs, which means something to some people, I'm sure.
Okay, right. Let's roll it back in then. It's presented by a married couple. And who were they?
Vanessa and Nick Lachey.
Yes.
Nick Lachey used to be in a boy band years and years ago, and then he graduated from failed boy band career to reality star career by marrying Jessica Simpson on the MTV show Newlyweds.
Okay.
But then
he is
divorced Simpson, found Vanessa, who was a TV host, and now this is their life.
So this is the two of them explaining the premise. Let's see if they do a better job than you, Louise.
Okay. I'm Vanessa Lachey.
I'm obviously Nick Lachey, her husband. Welcome to the Blind Love Experiment. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Here, you will choose someone to marry without ever seeing them.
Amber, will you marry me?
Yes.
Woo! You know I need
you. Once you're engaged, you'll finally get to see your fiancé for the very first time. And you're gonna attempt to grow your emotional connection into a physical one.
In just 4 weeks, you'll be at your wedding. Will you say I do to the person you chose, sight unseen?
Of course I did.
Or are you gonna walk away from them forever?
Yes, and there's a constant countdown clock of the number of days to the wedding day.
Weddings. Yeah. It's a weddings. Plural.
All, yes.
So it's it's mass weddings.
Okay.
So it's quite well, I mean, as storytelling goes, it's got quite good bits in it. So, because you've got that insane scenario. So the first thing is, how are they going to react when they see each other?
Yes. And then that's a moment.
Then they have to go back to the real world. And actually, what's kind of gas, I couldn't help thinking of when I was younger and people went to the Gaeltacht and found the love of their life and came back like completely in love with some boy or girl they'd met back in the Gaeltacht. And then it was going, and you're going to get married now because of that type of connection. But then the next bit is they go back into they go on holidays. Mm. So you see how they're like together, seeing each other. And then the next bit is they go back into as a version of the real world where they have to meet their families who are all kind of shocked and appalled.
And it's very interesting because Lauren and Cameron are an interracial couple. And a lot is made about that, isn't it? And when Lauren brings Cameron to meet her dad, very suspicious.
Because both Lauren and Cameron are saying they're kind of like, race isn't an issue here or whatever. But when they finally meet Bill, the father, Bill makes an impression on everybody.
He's impressive.
Yeah, well, he is. Yeah. He kind of really hammers home. He's like, have you ever dated a black woman before? Because you will face issues. And then separately, Cameron's way of proving that was rapping to Lauren's mother to prove that he could understand. Like, it's all...
I'm not going to play all of the rap, but just this is a bit of... this white boys can't rap unless, of course, you're Eminem or loads of other people. But this is Cameron who is rapping to Lauren's mother.
She said that you were in a rap group one time.
Back in college, I used to do a lot of... I was in a hip-hop group and we performed a little bit.
Do you remember it?
Don't.
You want me to do
that?
No, don't.
Sure. I'm feeling like a kid with you. You're my main chick, those other girls are previews. Hop in the back, rolling up, then we're free to cruise.
Sorry, I can't play anymore.
Did you not think that was great?
No, I didn't. But Cameron impressed me because she was funny. And she was grounded.
Lauren, yeah.
Yeah. Did you?
So it was kind of interesting watching because them as a couple, I thought they actually seemed to like each other and they seemed normal enough. They seemed like they were kind of smart and funny. And I kind of went, okay, maybe that kind of makes sense. Some of the others I felt were kind of, they knew it was a reality show. They were playing a bit of a game. There was couples I was pretty sure knew they were, like Jessica, I was pretty sure knew she was going to say no on the altar.
Jessica, for our listeners.
I don't know. Well, probably. We probably can't talk about the weddings.
We can't talk about the weddings.
But yeah. Jessica, 34, Mark, 24.
Yeah.
And that was always going to be a problem for
Jessica. Well, they play up all of these potential problems. And some of them you do think they're kind of ridiculous things. And then in other cases you go, okay, maybe that is going to be an issue for them. Then there are other cases where they're so different. And like I thought that, is it Amber and
Burnett
were so mismatched that they're probably going to be together for life because he's got no spine.
Or unless she kills him, it's real.
So you're watching it going, okay, maybe that one will work out for the wrong reasons.
Now, Barnett, as well as having a sort of movie star name, has movie star looks. At the beginning, he is very much playing the game, isn't he?
It is fascinating that was able to be communicated through the walls, because he had about four women falling at the, on the floor after him, and he's just like, any single one of these could be a good wife.
How do you explain that? How do you explain that, Louise?
How do I
is it a confidence? Is it a but is it a confidence that comes with him knowing that he's a good-looking guy?
There is probably a certain delivery that a certain like vocal delivery that a man like him has, I would imagine, because he does seem to come from quite a like a jockey background.
He sounds like he is used to talking to women in bars.
Yeah,
and he's got that confidence. And the other thing I found fascinating about him is that after you get to see him in the real world, you realize that is a complete act. He's a really uptight kind of guy who's really worried about what his family
thinks. If I was marrying Amber, I would suddenly become quite uptight.
She is an ex-tank mechanic.
Yeah.
With crippling financial debt.
Yes.
And my favourite thing is that being an ex-tank mechanic with the ex not being explained at all, suggesting this fascinating backstory that someone has to go into.
Okay, you watch a lot of television. You're intelligent people.
Arguably.
Yeah, but for me, I spotted a few cracks which suggested that maybe it's not that much reality and a lot more scripted and maybe even actors. I don't know. But for example, right, one of the girls, she gets married, and I'm not giving away her name because it'd be a spoiler alert, but she runs from the altar. And the camera follows her out, which I think is particularly cruel. She's running away, takes her shoes off. She slips down a ravine and dirties the dress.
Yeah.
Then we see her bark to confront the man who has said no to her, and the dress is suddenly pristine clean. Explain that to me, Patrick Frayne.
I didn't make the show. I think that they definitely shoot things out of sequence in all of these shows, and I think with some of them they're playing the game more than others. And with I won't say which one it was, but definitely with some of them I thought they were playing a reality TV show, that game that they've watched. See what happens now in reality TV, even when people cry now, I don't trust it in reality TV,
because
people have watched so much reality television that they've kind of adopted a way of doing reality TV. And I don't think they even have to be kind of coached by an editor or a director.
And if I'm wrong and it is all real, Louise, then there's a duty of care on behalf of the producers, because people are being very publicly rejected.
Yeah, like I feel like there'll be a lot of family fallouts as a result, because when you are watching the weddings happen, it's really interesting to just watch the reactions to the family and friends and the audience, because it's a feeling I've never seen before at a wedding. It's more than fear, it's more than disappointment. It's probably like, what have we raised? What have we brought into the world?
So just to explain to people, so you have that moment where there's a celebrant and they give all the Love is Blind propaganda and then they have to say, I do or I don't.
Yeah.
And nobody knows, us, the viewers, members of the family, sometimes even themselves, they don't know until they utter those words.
So I've never been at a real wedding where the gap between do you take this person is filled with dramatic music and there's a massive pause.
It's like who wants to be a millionaire music.
If anyone out there is about to get married, do that at your wedding. That would be spectacular. But that's basically what happens. They don't know until the very end if people are going to completely go through with it.
So it must be in their contract that they have to walk all the way up the altar and then just, you know, make a life-changing decision. Well, until the divorce comes in.
Some of them looked way more comfortable with it than others, which again suggests that they're either comfortable in the relationship or they're comfortable in that reality TV world existence. Yeah. Others looked like they had been sent up the island at gunpoint.
I would worry for the mental health of some of the participants.
I'd worry about it when they were going into it, or how they picked applicants out, because there is a real, I do get a sense that they had no idea what they were signing up for, because they, even during their wedding ceremonies, they keep referring to it as the experiment, which is no way to refer to
a relationship. It's sort of like out of a sci-fi movie, isn't it? The experiment.
The experiment with the pods. Like, it's all just, it's just
futuristic.
Not a
good world. I love the bit where, is it Bill, Lauren's father, says, we didn't do things like this in my day, which suggests a little like this is just how young people get married now in a pod.
Should people, if they're stuck in with Storm Jorge over the weekend, should they watch Love is Blind on Netflix?
Storm or not, go all in.
Okay, Patrick?
I don't know if I can recommend it, but I found it incredibly compelling while I was watching it.
Okay, if you turn around, Mark and Usheen are back to sing us out. What are you going to sing us out with?
We're going to sing a Beatles tune. Mark and I used to live in Liverpool from Navan and Omagh, but we used to live around the corner where a 17-year-old McCartney and Harrison wrote this.
Okay.
It's called In Spite of All the Danger.
In spite of all the danger, in spite of all that may be, oh, I'll do anything for you, anything you want me to, if you'll be true to me. In spite of all the heartache that you made for me, oh, I'll do anything for you, anything you want me to, if you'll be true to me. I'll look after you like I've never done before. I'll keep all those others from knocking at your door. In spite of all the danger, in spite of all that may be, oh, I'll do anything for you, anything you want me to, if you'll be true to me. Of all that may be, oh, I'll do anything for you, anything you want me to, if you'll be true to me.
Hey! Woo! Lost Brothers and the LostBrothersBand.com for all their gigs. And the new album is?
After the Fire, After the Rain, just out.
Oisin, thanks very much.
Cheers,
Mark,
Ray.
Thank you. And we'll give the final word to this person. I'm married for 30 years and I see no problem with the premise of this show. Love is truly blind. I first met my wife when she worked at a shop near where I was working and I heard her voice. She immediately got my attention. When you know, that's how love is. So there, take that away with you for this weekend. Mary Wilson's on the way. We're back at 3 o'clock on Monday. Enjoy the weekend and we'll talk to you at 3 o'clock then.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Talk to us about protecting yourself from flu this winter at Allcare, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.